This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, episode number 729, 729. Thank you so much for joining me today as I am sitting in the car. So pardon the audio quality. It won't last long because we'll get into the main portion of this show, which will be a replay of our self-management panel from our recent real estate software with Real Estate Tools. That was our joint event with Real Estate Tools and my company. We talked about technology for real estate investors and self-management versus professional property management. And Fernando and I happened to meet here today in Mesa, Arizona, at a little income property expo, and we thought we'd just report on that real quickly in this intro portion here before we get to the main part of the show. Fernando, welcome. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Jason. Nice to be here.
Good to have you. And so we met up at this little expo. Then we just decided to walk out and record this intro here sitting in my car, which is soon to be your car.
That's true.
Tell everybody about that. Well, we've done a lot of business together, Fernando, you and I.
Well, I wasn't much of an electric car fan, but after being here with you and seeing how cool your car is, and you know, a lot of the pluses and some minuses, but I think mostly pluses, I made up my mind that this is the next step in, you know, going from my current, you know, Audi based car with a combustion engine to going to an electric vehicle as powerful and as interesting as the Tesla, and is really
as sexy as the Tesla.
As sexy, yeah.
This is a sexy looking car.
It is a great car. So
Fernando bought my car. Yeah. It's a small world. So first Fernando was a client and he bought a bunch of properties, of course, and then he came to work with us. Then together last year, we bought that real estate software company, Real Estate Tools. And then he says, you know what? Why don't I buy your Tesla from you? And so we just struck a deal. And now he's going to be ending up owning this car soon. Well, so there you go.
I like to have you pay for the
depreciation,
of a new car.
Yes.
You know, it worked out well.
Yeah, I definitely took the depreciation hit. Never, ever, ever consider an automobile an investment. It's a terrible deal. No matter which way you slice it. But hey, let's tell the listeners about some of the things. You know, we just spent the last hour or so walking around visiting all of the exhibitors. We talked to every one of them. We talked to a company that offers nationwide insurance. We talked to a company that has high-tech locking mechanisms for properties. I'm really sort of excited about that one. I know you are too, because that lends itself well to self-management of our properties. And we talked to some vendors that do paving and things like this. There's a lot of apartment people here. Gosh, the hard surface flooring, that was a pretty good deal, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in your properties, Fernando, you're converting, I believe, all of them, as am I, whenever I have a make ready and it's time to just get rid of the carpet and install new carpet, I am not doing carpet anymore. I'm doing hard surface floors. And you can do this for around $2 per square foot. Talk to us about what you're doing. And well, you're paying a little more than that, right?
Yeah. So we just met with a vendor in this expo, income property expo, and their prices are excellent. I mean, what I think what he quoted was $2 a square foot installed for plank vinyl, which is, you know, going back to what you said, I'm trying to standardize in my properties and not use carpet. and use plank vinyl throughout the entire property. Plank vinyl lasts a long time, and you know, as we're discussing here, it's not that expensive, and they have so many different textures and colors. You can really spruce up your place with a plank vinyl and make it look very sharp and not spend as much money. And if it's going to be there throughout your house and last forever, it's definitely a good investment compared to anything else you could do.
Yeah, and so cost-wise, here's the approximate difference, at least from this vendor. You know, if you have a 1,500-square-foot house, this is about $2 per square foot, and you can put it in every room. And I really recommend that you don't cut up your house with a bunch of different floorings. Number one, it's overcomplicated. Number two, it really doesn't look good. I think it looks the best when you just have one flooring throughout. And in my opinion, it should be the lighter plank vinyl, the lighter colored version of it. I think the darker color gets dusty. It shows the scuffs a little bit more, and it also makes the house look smaller when it's darker. Mm-hmm. So I like the lighter look, definitely. Kind of like the Apple store. You know, if you've been to an Apple store, you know, their look, and I hear they're going to update that, so this will not be timeless, by the way. It's the Apple store as of today, not tomorrow. But this plank vinyl is really good, and this guy quoted that at $2 a square foot and carpet at $1.19 per square foot. So $1.20 a square foot, well, let's just take 1,000 square foot house, $1,200 for carpet throughout, and obviously you wouldn't do carpet throughout, but just to compare apples to apples. And the plank vinyl in that 1,000 square foot house is going to be $2,000 to do that. I think that extra $800 in that example is very well spent for the long run, because you're just not going to have the make-ready issues down the road. You know, it becomes, nothing is indestructible, but, you know, figure of speech, kind of an indestructible house, right?
The plank vinyl is easy to replace if there is one, you know, that's why it's called plank vinyl. It comes in planks, and if you need to replace one plank, it's very easy to do.
You just cut it out with a big X-Acto knife.
Exactly, yeah. And the installation is very simple. There's different kinds of plank vinyl, but there's a version of it that they sell at Home Depot that you install with a pair of scissors, you know, just a heavy-duty pair of scissors, and it's not even glued down. It's really easy to install. Now, these prices are excellent. I wish this vendor was national, but I think he's local, and, you know, here's in Arizona. I know that Home Depot sells for $1.79 a lot of their Allure plank vinyl that I've looked into. So by the time you get that installed, you know, it'll cost a few dollars a square foot. So his prices are really good.
And here's the thing, folks. Look at, don't let your property managers mark this stuff up a whole bunch, or don't let them choose the most expensive vendor in your market. Look at, you can get this stuff. The great thing about the world today is that we are in the world of the empowered investor. You can go online and you can find this stuff, and the new benchmark is $2 a square foot for plank vinyl. So if you can get it for close to that, that's what this guy's price was. But, you know, if you can get it for $2.10 a square foot, even, you know, $2.15, $2.20 a square foot, you're doing pretty darn good, I think, okay? So that was one thing. And what we want to do is make the long-term cost of these properties lower. So if you inherited or purchased a house with carpet, well, I don't think many of our investors are inheriting these properties, but whatever.
Inheriting from a previous investor.
I don't know why I said that. Well, you're inheriting it from somebody, I guess. But, you know, you bought a property and it had partial carpet. Get on a track of replacing with this plank vinyl. I think that's a very good decision, and I think you'll be much happier in the long run. Your house will be more bulletproof.
Yes.
So that's good. Now, the other thing is these locks, and we're going to talk about this in the upcoming segment here in just a moment. But again, the empowered investor, you can self-manage properties. The lock technology, I think, has been, comparatively to smartphones and all of these great things we have, I think it's been pretty slow to evolve, honestly. Mm-hmm. But it is right upon us. Mm-hmm. Where we saw a lock today, what was that called? Kevo?
K-E-V-O.
Yep. And I think it's by Kwikset is the manufacturer. So K-E-V-O. And what this lock is a Bluetooth-enabled electronic lock. Right. And it was pretty neat the way that worked without having a Wi-Fi or a cellular receiver and transmitter in that lock.
Right.
It's simply a Bluetooth transmitter receiver, right?
Right.
Thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I think that's halfway, you know, from an investor
perspective. It's not quite there, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, we had an interesting session with the guys at the booth.
We got the whole demo.
Yeah, we gave it the whole demo, and we gave them a piece of our mind as far as what we would like to see as investors.
We're never critical.
And, you know, they're doing something neat, which is a Bluetooth-enabled electronic lock, and essentially your smartphone can control the lock as long as you're within, you know, 30 feet or so of the lock. And you obviously can communicate with the lock via your smartphone. But what we want is, you know, we're not at the property. The properties that we own when there's a make ready, they're vacant. And we are probably thousands of miles away from the property. So we want...
Because we invest where it makes sense.
Exactly.
Not where it's convenient to have a lock and key, you know?
Yeah, and we're, you know, we don't live near the property. Right. So... We wanted to make sure that lock can communicate with the software that controls the lock via a cellular connection.
Okay.
We don't want Wi-Fi because we don't, you know, the house is vacant and maybe it doesn't even have electricity. So that has to be
addressed. It's not going to have Wi-Fi, so it needs cellular. But, Fernando, it's not that bad. You know, this does more than you led them to believe. You got to tell them the little secret. So here's the way this Kivo lock works, okay? And I know sometimes on the show we talk about big, elaborate macro trends in the economy and big, elaborate investing philosophies. Now we're just being a little practical today, folks. So we're talking about some nuts and bolts stuff. You know, on a future show, we'll talk about the big, you know, elaborate stuff, you know, or the big philosophical stuff. But here's the way this works. Basically, with the Kivo lock, you can provide access to contractors, repair people, prospective tenants, prospective agents and property managers that you might want to hire so they can look at the property, an insurance agent, whatever, right? And here's the way you do it. It's pretty cool. Even though it doesn't have everything Fernando wants, which I agree, I want all that too, but it's a step in the right direction. And so here's the way it works. You download an app to your smartphone, and you can control that lock via Bluetooth. But you can control it via Bluetooth sort of as a proxy through somebody else's phone. So that person is local. So it might be, say, a painter. And you say, hey, go paint this house for me or go give me a quote on painting it. The painter's got a smartphone and you tell them to download the Kivo app, which is a free app they can just download in the App Store. And then you basically link over the internet with their app. Mm-hmm. And you basically give them through the internet a key to that lock. Mm-hmm. And that key has an expiration on it. And as soon as they open that lock with their smartphone, you get a notification saying the lock was open. So you know exactly what time they opened it and what time they locked it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's pretty cool. Even though there's no Wi-Fi or cellular, it works through Bluetooth as a proxy. Okay.
But of course, we need to see how it works in real life. As we all know, to make a connection via Bluetooth with your car can be very frustrating when you have multiple devices and sometimes
it
loses.
What do you mean with your car?
When you have a Bluetooth enabled car where you're trying to connect your phone
with
the car. And if you have multiple devices, you know, there's issues that I can imagine with the tenants not being able to have the Bluetooth enabled or not making the right connections.
Well, remember, the lock has a regular key on it. So your regular tenant will probably just use a key.
Yeah.
Okay, but you can use the electronic functionality of it too.
Right.
And so like what I can see happening is the person downloads the app, they get the key from you, the virtual key, and then they go to the door and it won't work because maybe the Bluetooth on their phone is turned off.
Right.
Right? Like sometimes I forget to turn mine on. Like, why isn't it working?
Yeah.
Well, it's not on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's certainly not perfect. Okay. But, you know, the point is, investors, look, it's an amazing time to be alive, and these technologies are progressing to empower us all more so that we don't have to be beholden to a property manager, and we can manage and run our properties from around the world. It's truly amazing how you can do this nowadays. And what you're going to talk about in the upcoming panel that we're about to play the recording from is about these lock boxes that do that.
Right.
And so stay tuned for a moment and you'll hear more about that. Without boring them on this lock subject and the flooring too much, what else do we want them to know from this? Any takeaways today? Nursing homes are far more complicated than they look. one of my friends here who promotes assisted living, I think that's a great idea. But like anything, you got to be a specialist. And it's much more complicated in real life than all the promoters make it sound. I hope I'm not that guy, by the way, because I constantly talk about
we need to tell
anybody that is scheduled to host a booth in an expo that you must know about your product. Otherwise,
oh my God,
you're going to get customers that become aggravated very quickly. I think you had that experience today.
So on one of my apartment complexes, I wanted to do some repaving. Well, and in my mobile home park too, same thing, you know, because the blacktop is looking pretty ratty, okay? And I walked up to the booth and, well, you know, how much does it cost to do a parking lot? What's the price per square yard? And they don't know. It's mind-boggling. Well, and I understand completely it depends on the condition, right? Is it level ground? Is it all, you know, do we have to do a bunch of move some stones and rocks? And is it all alligatored, as they call it, you know, with the way it breaks up over time? I get it. But where does it start? You can't even give me the starting cost. Are you kidding? Like, unbelievable.
It's a secret. He truly did not know.
Yeah. Yeah. So. We looked at some screening services. That was kind of an interesting discussion with a tenant screening service.
Yeah.
Also, the other thing I just want to mention to you investors, this one is something I have not talked about very much over the past 728 episodes. But, I really want you to consider adding a little color to your properties in the interior. I think, having an accent wall that has a color on it would be a pretty good thing. I think it would be attractive to tenants. When that home is vacant and they're looking at that, I just think that really livens it up. I remember a bunch of my properties and offices when I had regular real estate offices and I had, homes I was living in that I owned. I would paint this beautiful color. It was Ralph Lauren, Malena Red or Malaya Red. I can't remember, but it was gorgeous. And all the other walls, I just leave them alone. But I just do one wall in that color, and people constantly commented on how beautiful that was. And the Ralph Lauren, you don't want to buy that brand because it's outrageously priced, but every other paint vendor just copies it, and they give you this exact same color. And you want to do this with, again, to make your properties more durable, eggshell finish paint or low sheen finish paint, because flat paint scuffs up and it looks so bad so quickly. You want your properties to be durable. It's slightly more expensive, not much, but doing the eggshell or low sheen paint is talk about lowering the cost of ownership over time and your properties. Fernando, you're nodding your head like crazy.
I agree 100% because with eggshell, the low sheen finish, there's a good chance of you being able to just literally wipe off some of those marks on the wall and not have to do
painting.
Or the only issue, the main issue with these low sheen paints, including eggshell, is that the touch up is very tricky because over time the sheen changes.
It mellows.
Yeah.
It mellows. But the idea is you don't have to do touch up in the first place, hopefully, because it'll last long. I remember my last house in Orange County that I sold in 2011. I had eggshell paint on there, and I lived there for 7 years, and that paint looked pretty good the day I moved out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, the new buyer did repaint because I went over and saw them afterwards, but boy, I couldn't believe how durable it was.
Yeah, really, yeah, it's definitely the right choice.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, hey, I think we ought to get to our segment today without going too long here. Be sure you go and check out jasonhartman.com for some great properties and check out hartmaneducation.com for some great educational products. Several of you have expressed an interest and a couple of you have signed up for the Venture Alliance. We've got our next meeting coming up in the beginning of December, tentatively planned for our hometown here, Scottsdale, Arizona, right here locally. So that's going to be a great event. More to come on that. Check out Venture Alliance Mastermind for details on the Venture Alliance High-Level Mastermind Group. And let's get to our segment where we talk about self-management on this great panel with Fernando and Oliver. Let's talk a little bit about managing your property manager versus self-management. We've got Oliver and Fernando here to talk about this. You've got 70 units now. You said a very interesting thing to me at, I think it was the last Meet the Masters, maybe the one before, possibly. And what you said is you said some of your self-managed properties are easier than your property manager properties. Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Tell us about that.
So there's different aspects of it. One of them is just because you have a property manager, it doesn't mean necessarily that the properties are on cruise control. You have to look at the statements. You have to approve items. You have to be on top of items that look suspicious on the statement. There's time involved in talking to your property managers. And if you add all of that up compared to self-management, it does play a role into which one is easiest. And
so how many units are self-managed in your portfolio and how many are property managed by managers?
So actually, I have two new things that you don't know about.
All right.
That's going to be pretty interesting.
I can't wait to hear them.
You're going to hear. In the last Meet the Masters, I had about 10 properties that were self-managed, and most of them were in Austin, Texas. Austin was a good choice, is a good choice for self-management, because the tenant pool in Austin is B+. There's a lot of tech industry in Austin, and the properties that I own there are B+ properties. And therefore, those tenants are easier to deal with. A lot of them, they are tech savvy. If there is issues, they can do some of the research. They sometimes can fix the properties themselves. They use email. You know, they can communicate well. They're easier to deal with.
The basic concept there is a more sophisticated tenant is easier to deal with as long as they're not a lawyer. I had a lawyer call me up. He said, my wife and I want to rent a property and we have two dogs and we're both lawyers. I'm sure you don't want to rent two lawyers and two dogs, right? He said that, not me. I didn't say anything. But he just, yeah.
But the most interesting aspect of it is that the dynamics when you're self-managing in this sort of B to A type tenant pool, the dynamics are just different in that the tenants tend to ask for a lot less things and they tend to be self-reliant, which means that you have less issues. A lot of times the tenant will say, send an email because they use email and like some other transit tenants. And they'll say, you know, there's a problem with the AC. What would you like me to do? I already checked and there's a local guy here. If you don't have anybody available, maybe I can call the local guy.
That's how my Houston tenant was, self-managed property.
Yeah.
Just he did all the work. It was amazing. Yeah.
So I smiled and I said, oh, please contact the guy and let me know and I'll reimburse you whatever is needed. There was another case where there was a leak and the flooring got wet. And the tenant, took out the part of the carpet that was wet and called somebody to see if that could be addressed and was not just telling me what the problem was, but also providing suggestions and being proactive, which is just awesome.
Okay, so here's the thing that happens with self-management. So first, let me just tell you what happened to me on the road to self-management. I had a Texas property. Property manager wrote a letter. I'm getting out of the business. I'm not going to be doing property management anymore. And so I had Karen, my operations manager at the time, researching other property managers. It was a market that we weren't very active in, at the time. She started researching other properties managers. She found a couple of them, said, made some suggestions. I was just busy, and I did not get around to actually hiring a property manager. Following month, I get a check in the mail with a nice note. Hi, Jason. I heard that I should send the checks to you right now. This is your tenant on so-and-so street. And he wrote me a nice note, right? And he says, if you need anything, he says this to me, if you need anything, here's my number and email address, right? And he stayed there for about, 3.5 years. And it was awesome. I couldn't believe it. After receiving checks from the tenant directly for, get this, a property I've never seen, a tenant I've never met. Right? I just thought it was a phenomenal experience. And what I kind of realized, and I know a lot of you are thinking, well, I can't self-manage properties from a distance. Well, two things about that. Number one is, in the vast majority of cases, except for maybe annual inspections, how do you think your property manager knows if there's something wrong with the property? The tenant tells them, right? The tenant is the monitor of the property, okay? Not the manager. The manager doesn't live there, obviously.
I think ultimately what it comes down to is really setting the expectation up front as much as you can with that tenant. So in terms of, you know, setting the expectation of when something does go wrong, these are the steps to take, whether it be send me a text right away or if not, send me an email, have some sort of correspondence. And if you, even if you want, you can even set the expectation of if it's under a certain amount, for example, like $100 or $200, you can go ahead and do so if, you know, and if we have any issues with it thereafter, then we'll take care of it. And there's very easy ways to actually to credit the tenants with certain programs that we use.
You can make
we'll
a deal with
it.
The tenant saying that they have to do the repairs under a certain dollar amount. I mean, I know landlords that do that all the time. See, here's what the other thing that happens with self-management is that the tenant has the social pressure of maintaining a relationship with you. And you'll attest to this, I know. Okay, so the tenant needs to maintain this good relationship with you as the owner. And with a property management company, ABC Property Management, they just sort of act like they ask for everything. Oh, I saw an ant in the kitchen. You better send an exterminator over. You know, a light bulb burnt out. Oh, come and fix it, you know. And when it's a person that they're dealing with, and they know you're an owner, you're the owner of the property, and they have that social pressure of needing to maintain that relationship with you, they literally, at least in my experience, they just don't ask for that much.
It's a similar concept when you go on vacation and you stay in a large hotel. Any little thing that goes wrong, you feel, at least I don't feel,
you don't feel bad about asking
yeah, you know, for them to come fix. But if I'm I'm doing a home exchange or staying in somebody's home, you know, you have a different relationship with the person. Right, you're almost embarrassed to say certain things, and you just fix it.
Yeah.
So that is definitely true. You are a tenant, and so am I.
Interestingly.
At the moment. We both rent.
I love renting because, well, we have to touch on why, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you rent a high-end property, it's such a good deal because the rent-to-value ratio just gets all out of whack, and the delta between these two are just mind-boggling, right? You rent, if your property is under $200,000, you should probably own it. If it's over $200,000, that delta gets bigger and bigger, and if it's $2 million, you're definitely better off being a renter. But what about that, were you going to say about repairs, right?
I can see that dynamic playing with myself as a tenant. If I have an issue with the house, and I've met the owners and I know them, you know, I fix it myself before thinking of asking them. It's almost embarrassing.
If you lived in some big institutional apartment or you had a property management company managing that property, you would no hesitation.
No hesitation.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So the two updates that I wanted to talk to you about, I think it was either last Meet the Masters or 2 years ago where we talked about that flat fee concept.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
2 years ago.
Two years ago.
A year and a half, really.
Right. So I actually have that in place with my property manager in St. Louis.
Ah, so yeah. Tell us what the deal is.
Right.
What percentage did you agree to?
So I have eight buildings in St. Louis, two fourplexes and the rest are duplexes. And I was paying, I negotiated about 8% monthly fee for property management, plus the normal lease up fees and, you know, some percentage of maintenance that they charge on top of the regular repairs.
So this is the old deal?
Old deal. Okay. You know, that's what most property managers do. I wasn't too happy with this property management company, and I decided to switch over to some other property manager that I had a relationship with previous to the one that I have in St. Louis. And I negotiated with the property manager a flat fee that includes the regular monthly fee that property managers charge, in my case, 8%. It includes all the lease-up fees, the renewal fees, and any other of the nickel and diming type of fees that you might see in a regular property management. And we negotiated a rate of 12% that would cover the entire
Everything.
Yeah, the whole thing.
What about on the late fees?
Everything.
So, in other words, they get 12% of the late fee and you get the rest instead of them keeping it all.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, it's a very simple equation. And we just started about 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal is that as I add more properties, so what I've done is I've tried this model with one building, and if it works well, I'll be moving over some of the buildings from my traditional property management agreement to this new model.
So this is what I had suggested at Meet the Masters 2015, that the property management fees, and we talked about it with our local market specialist meeting on Friday before this event, I suggested that it be a flat concept where instead of having clients feel nickel and dimed, that they actually pay a higher percentage. I didn't name what that percentage was. It's just whatever people agree to. These are not fixed by law. You know, it's a competitive market, obviously. But actually pay a higher percentage, but know what I call garbage fees. No lease-up fees. When a late fee is collected from the tenant, because we want to have the interest be aligned between the tenant and the manager, when a late fee is collected, the manager doesn't keep it all, as they mostly do. It is split on that percentage. So if it's 12%, then 12% of every dollar that comes in goes to the property manager, but nothing else. No renewal fees, no lease-up fees, no late fees in the sense that they keep it all, which it doesn't feel like that's a charge to you, the owner, but guess what? Your tenant is your customer. We got to remember that. Our tenant is actually the one paying the money, right? They're our customer. You know, you don't want to make the manager predatory on the tenant in that example. You don't want to give them too high a motivation to be collecting late fees, because then your tenant's going to be unhappy and you're going to have a higher turnover rate. And that's not going to be good, right? You want your tenants to stay a long time.
In my opinion, this right. works even better with multiplexes, because now instead of having... You know,
where you see the movies?
Yeah, exactly where you see the movies.
Canadian.
Yeah, we go to the cinema. Anyways, it works even better with the fourplexes, duplexes, et cetera. Right. Just because you're now having that one set rate, instead of having to essentially manage and look after each expense for every one of those units. Right. Like, tell us a bit more about how much time and how much less stressful it is when you're reviewing those statements every month.
Right. And also, on the same vein, because these are the transient tenants and the ones that have the highest turnover, there's a lot more lease-up type costs, either release or new tenants, turnover. So having a flat rate works in my favor for those sorts of properties. So I'm really excited about
For the lower rate, like C-plus properties, C properties,
right.
It's better. You don't think that would work on the A's? I mean, where you have managers or in the B properties?
I mean, I haven't tried that. I haven't put too much thought into it. But as Oliver mentioned, the amount of decisions that you have to make in how much of those charges you have to watch out for, it increases with the lower quality tenant.
Right.
So having a flat fee works in the landlord favor.
Yeah, good, good. And I think it aligns your interest with the property manager. One of the real problems that may not have occurred to you yet, and it took a while for it to really occur to me, is that there's a concept in business and in law that you can't serve two masters. For example, if you hire an attorney, they can't work for you and the other side too, even though sometimes it might feel that way. Technically, they can't be working for the other side and for you at the same time, because it's a conflict of what? A conflict of interest, right? The property manager sort of has this inherent conflict of interest. They're really serving two masters, because they have to serve the investor owner of the property, but they also have to serve the tenant in a way. Why do they feel like they have to serve the tenant, you might think? Well, they do, because the tenants, they get angry and they go online and they start writing stuff on Yelp, okay, or wherever. The property manager does not want that to happen. And they don't want complaints at the Better Business Bureau and whatever, even though the Better Business Bureau is a bit of a joke, if you ask me. They don't want this. So they have to serve two masters, the investor and the tenant. And I find that a lot of times the property managers, they're reluctant to take legitimate fees out of the tenant's security deposit. Do you find this to be true at all?
Not so much that, but I can see where that would happen.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, there are a lot of tenants out there, or property management, especially whenever any of you have any type of make-ready, watch what they put into that scope of work, because you could essentially dispute some of those items so that they actually be withdrawn from that security deposit. As Jason mentioned, they want to stay in the good favor of the tenant, so that way they don't get bad reviews. Some of the best property management companies I've worked with have horrible reviews on Yelp and some other outlets out there. But ultimately, just bear that in mind whenever you're doing your due diligence and your research online.
And interestingly, you say some of the best you've worked with have horrible Yelp reviews because they're fighting for the owner.
Exactly.
And those reviews are probably from tenants, right? I mean, they may not be. Owners could review them too, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. Just meet with them as if you can. Otherwise, just do your due diligence in terms of interviewing them, asking the right questions.
Jason talks about this all the time. You know, if you have a property manager and you have good chemistry with them, and if they're doing a good job and you don't have issues, keep them.
Yeah.
You know, they are worth their weight. And I do have one property manager in particular that goes on cruise control, very few interactions with them. They work very well. So I'm not touching that at all.
In other words, it's cruise control for you, not them.
Yeah.
Because they're doing
their
work.
They are doing their job.
Yeah, right. As they should be.
On the other side of the spectrum, so we talked about self-management. So the next update that I wanted to bring up is in Atlanta, I had a property management company that was managing about 25 of my properties. And I was paying, it's a traditional type of arrangement with them. I was paying them, I negotiated, I think, down to 7% monthly fees, but they had all kinds of
all
garbage fees and
yeah,
stuff.
Right.
It was actually closer to 8 or probably more, at least on the fees, not counting the lease up and all that sort of stuff. But they weren't doing a good job. Be very careful with quote-unquote property managers that are nothing more than dispatchers. They should be solving problems, not just passing the problem onto you.
Yeah, right.
And it really, it got to a point that there were in this case, there were two people that were working in this property management company. And one of them was terrible at this issue, where an issue would come up from the tenant, and the property manager would not provide any solutions when the communication would come to me.
They'd simply
it's just,
pass
here's
the
problem,
yeah.
Please advise.
Yeah, right.
My immediate reply, okay, tell me more about it. How much is it going to cost? Are there different options? It was always the same type of conversation. It got really old very quickly. And I looked at the amount of money I was paying to them. I mean, there's 25 properties at a standard type of property management, roughly $4,500 a month.
With all 25 properties. You were a nice account for them.
Very nice account. As I mentioned, there were two people working in this property management company, and I got along pretty well with one of them, which I had a relationship with in the past through another property manager company. And I wanted to know if there was a better way to do this. You know, could I self-manage these properties? And what I decided to do is to give an ultimatum to the property management company. And I told them that they had to cut their fees by 50%.
Wow. To $2,250.
Yeah, exactly.
See, you can't say that when you're only paying the manager $90 a month, just so you know. It's just not going to work.
You have more leverage.
Okay, yeah.
And I would be willing to stay, you know, working with you if you cut your fees by 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, what I'm going to do is I'm going to self-manage the properties. I'm going to transfer the properties under the LLC that owns title on the properties. And I'm going to hire an assistant to help me with the issues of property management.
For $2,250 a month, for $4,500 a month, you could pay someone 60 grand a year almost.
It gets better than that.
Yeah. Wow.
When I do the math with how much time they actually spend, I ask the property manager, how many hours a week do you actually spend on these 25-hour properties? Well, you know, so-and-so spends 5 hours. I spend about, you know, 5 hours, so maybe 10 hours a week.
Yeah.
So I did the math. I said, "Well, wait a minute. If I pay this guy, you know, 30, or I don't remember what the exact rate was, I would actually pay $1,500 a month for property management services through an assistant, compared to $4,500 that I was paying to the traditional broker." Well, I got the guy's attention. It's a small property management company. Yeah. So he called me the next day and, you know, you think I have 50% margin in my business? You know, what do you think you're doing? And blah, 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 blah. And I was very calm and I said, look, you might have the wrong business model.
Yeah.
You just might not realize that the industry's changing right under your feet.
Yeah, they don't. It's a really old-fashioned business, unfortunately.
And he was you know, telling me that he could not hold the account, and you know, there was no way that he could make this work, and would have to end the agreement. The conversation lasted about 5 minutes.
Yeah. You know, so now you're self-managing these?
Yeah. So we started this
3 months ago.
There was a termination clause that was in a contract that required me to stay with them for 60 days. So the 60 days expired, and we transferred over the properties, and Now we use AppFolio as part of the communication with the tenants and, mm-hmm. and track of accounts.
So you bought a subscription to AppFolio?
Yeah.
Yeah. How much was that?
I said $250 a month.
$250 a month. So yeah. So if you want to really build a good sized portfolio and self manage it, you can just use that yourself. Okay. Right. For example, you don't need to be in the property management business, but you can take advantage of the software they use. That's what property managers use, AppFolio, a lot of them.
The checks get directly deposited into my own bank account as opposed to staying a few days with the property manager. And
yeah. You using Cozy for that?
So Cozy I use for 10 other properties.
Okay.
And that's, Cozy is another company that
we love,
and we had them in Meet the Masters before.
Right.
They do rent collection really well, and they set up accounts with the tenants and have direct deposits coming to your account days after the payment is done, and it works really well.
They can actually also screen the tenants too, which helps immensely because the credit score will show up, their employment history, also any type of criminal record will also show up on some of these reports. That you'll just go to cozy.co, it's not .com, .co, and it happens seamlessly. And it only takes about 4 or 5 days to actually get your checks deposited. So for anyone self-managing, that's definitely a
So when
key.
You self-manage, you get your rent faster.
A lot
and
faster,
my mother, yeah. the extreme do-it-yourselfer, okay, and I disagree with her extreme do-it-yourselfer philosophy, but a little bit of do-it-yourselfer is okay. She's like a hawk. I mean, I remember I was at the Cleveland Clinic with her, and this might be a little overkill. I was trying to take the phone away from her. And she's literally in the recovery room. Coco and I are there visiting her. Yep, that's you, Coco. We're there visiting. You know, they let the dog in the recovery room, which was kind of cool. All the nurses fell all over the dog, just loved her. It's the first of the month, and she's looking to make sure her rents are in her bank account because she makes the tenant's responsibility to go to, she's with a national bank, okay, and the tenant's responsibility is go put the money in her account on the first. And if it's not there, she's on it. So versus having a property manager, you might not get paid till the 20th of that month because they've got to collect and do their process and the check has to clear and then they send the check to you or they deposit, direct deposit, hopefully in your account. If you've got a good property manager, they're worth their weight in gold, I mean in income property, because gold isn't that great, as we've discovered. but if you've got one that's just not that good, you know, you might try self-managing. Sometimes when you do things directly, it's actually more efficient than having someone else do it. Like if you look at two U.S. presidents, right? And one that I kind of consider to be a pretty bad president and one that I consider to be a pretty great president, Jimmy Carter versus Ronald Reagan. Now, this was way before my time. I wasn't even born yet. But I hear about them and watch some documentaries. And so, you know, Carter was like this. He did everything himself, supposedly, which wasn't really true, but that's the image he liked to portray, the common man thing, right? And Reagan was like an executive. He was more like a delegator, right? And some things, it's just easier to do them yourself. And if people try to tell you, oh, well, Jason, you got to delegate this, they say it to me, right? You said this to me. And sometimes it's true. It should be delegated. But sometimes it's literally just easier to do it yourself. And with technology that we have nowadays, a lot of times it's easier. I mean, look at the example of you go into some usually older executive's office, and occasionally you'll go into their office and there's no computer on their desk. It's kind of shocking. Well, I have a secretary for that. Are you kidding me? Like, you know, to type an email? I mean, that's just so inefficient. It's just easier to do it yourself than to have a third party. So sometimes it's easier you take out the middleman and go direct. But I think you really hit on it. It depends on the type of tenant.
Yeah.
If it's an A and B tenant, probably much easier. If it's a C tenant, you know, it's not as easy to self-manage.
I know most of you listen to the podcasts. There are a ton of companies that you bring up and interview,
yep.
the executives of these companies and the owners, and they tell you about these services that were traditionally done by property managers.
Like the a la carte type services.
A la carte right? services. Yeah. Cozy, we just mentioned yeah. that, or Rently.com, yeah. which does the lockbox and stuff. We have the National Eviction right. Podcast that you yep. had the other day. All of these pieces that were under the umbrella of a property manager can be done yep. more efficiently with all of these companies.
Yep.
You know,
directly.
And that's what essentially self-management is the ability to be able to create accounts and have these companies work directly with the property in this case, or with me, or with the with the bank for direct deposits and that sort of thing, and make it happen for you instead of having a property manager be the middleman.
In the beginning of the internet era, the first dot-com bubble that happened shortly after, but, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, the big word in the tech world, in the internet world, was disintermediation, right? Getting rid of the middleman. And, you know, you can deconstruct a lot of this stuff, and it's sort of a la carte now, that you really can do it more easily yourself. And one of the visions that Fernando and I have with Real Estate Tools is to create this platform that my dog moves like a cow. It's hilarious. Did you hear that way back there? Coco, what do you think? Yeah, see, there she is. She's behind Fernando there. So one of the visions we have is to create this platform that empowers investors to self-manage. And if they have a manager, empowers them to work better with their manager. They get the choice of how they want to do it. One thing I wanted to say about Oliver's comment, and it's really related to Cozy, is that there is a big sea change happening in the world of renting a property, and you need to know about it because it matters to you as investors. It probably matters more to the tenants, but it's just important to think about this and how it's going to play out over the years. Cozy just did a big deal with the National Association of Realtors. There are other companies doing big deals to work on this type of stuff. And the concept used to be, and still is largely, where when a tenant, because remember, we've got to understand their experience, have the tenant experience, not just our own experience as the landlord. When the tenant goes to look at different properties and they see one that they like to rent, they fill out an application with that individual owner and they pay them an application fee, you know, that'll cover the cost of the credit report, plus, frankly, make the owner a lot of money. Usually a lot of owners make a bunch of money screening tenants, frankly.
That's how Cozy makes money, because their collection is free, but they make money on the report.
Yeah, and on the float. How much do they charge for the reports for the tenant, do you know? Yeah.
I think it was like $35, maybe $50.
That's pretty reasonable, it's pretty cheap, frankly, compared to some that charge $250. It's absurd. It's really kind of ridiculous. One of the sea changes that's happening is instead of tenants applying for individual properties, they now go to one centralized place like Cozy, and they create a tenant profile. And I did this myself as a tenant on Zillow, where I basically went in, filled out a profile, put in, you know, here's my income, here's my whole scenario, and then if I get these alerts for properties, it just says send your report to the manager or the landlord or the owner, right? And I just click a button and they get my report and they call me right back because they say, hey, this looks like a pretty great tenant. Thank you. And so that's the way it really should be. So what does this mean to us? Well, we don't know yet, frankly. But one of the predictions I would make is that this is becoming a much more fluid, liquid, frictionless market with landlord-tenant relationship. That means that it will be easier for tenants to search for new properties and find new properties. And that's the same way with things like jobs. In the old days, people's resumes weren't perpetually online, but now they are with LinkedIn. Everybody's always available for a job. And if you're married, everybody's always available for an affair on Ashley Madison, okay? You know, it's like no one ever, the deal is never solid anymore. It's kind of a terrible thing in a way, right? So it's much more fluid and dynamic, and that's what's going to happen with tenants. I think it's going to be a lot easier for them to shop.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to work for us sometimes and against us other times.
Yeah.
But certainly, if we want it to work for us, we have to be using the modern technology, because that's where the tenants will find us, versus if they've got to go, if they call up about a property and they see an ad on Craigslist or something, and you know they say, well, come by, take a look, fill out an application, pay me an application fee, versus ours, they've just done a Cozy profile, and we're using Cozy, and they can just easily apply to us, right? We make it easier for the tenant, make it easy for our customers to do business with us.
And even viewing properties. I mean, did you talk to Rently yet on your podcast or no?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
The ones with the lockbox where you need to give a credit card?
Well, that's the one where I sent you that. I think I sent you a Voxer message from the IMN conference on that.
Yeah, that's probably So we are using Rently in one property in Austin. And actually,
wait till you hear this. This is awesome. Okay, explain to them how it works. It's awesome. This is awesome. It's an amazing time to be alive.
So Rently essentially puts lockboxes into homes, And you have access to the home by providing your credit card information. As a tenant, you can go view the home on your own. You don't need a property manager. You know, you just sign up online and you can go and check out if you like the property or not. You know who was there because they had to give their credit card in order to go there. And it's very convenient to get these reports that come online, and you can, you know, see what the activity is. You can see if your showings are going well. It's a very interesting model. The piece I think that Remly still needs to work on is the boxes can be placed in the home, but they don't physically deliver the boxes to where you have your properties.
So you can't really do it yourself. You could use TaskRabbit.
TaskRabbit, or you can use the tenant, the previous tenant. So that's what we do.
That's
we contact
who you should
the previous
use.
Tenant.
Yeah, right.
It says, can you put this lockbox there?
And what do you do, ship it to them? Do you have them at your house, or do you ship it direct from Rently?
Rently sends it to them.
Yeah. Isn't this amazing? Do you see how empowered you are nowadays? I mean,
so once you have that,
folks, are you awake? You should be amazed by this. Do you know how difficult it was to do all this stuff before?
You need more coffee.
The logistics that you just couldn't do it. Yeah, have you had enough coffee? Coffee is a superfood. Okay. Yeah.
And this coffee is great because it's
this
so
coffee
expensive.
Is pretty good here. Usually hotel coffee isn't good. I actually like this coffee pretty well. Usually it sucks.
But the key thing, so you're right. This is awesome because once you have a lockbox that is controlled remotely, you can have people that, the contractors go out there and do evals on your property or do make readies or move outs or move ins. You now have control. And that's what the property managers, that's why I had the argument with that guy in Atlanta, is that he doesn't see the business model changing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that hard to put a lockbox and have it controlled via, you know, via a mobile device.
And just to give you an example for that as to how easy it can be, we had a completely remodel. We had to take some carpet out and put laminate floors. And we actually had the entire job done without a tenant or anyone actually being present at the house. We coordinated everything via email.
So there's
and then
no
via text message.
No property manager,
no property
agent,
manager.
Nobody to let him in. Just
nothing.
Amazing.
It was absolutely it was unbelievable. The first time we'd really done that seamlessly. And you know, the person that was there just called me up, took pictures of the place and of the job done, and also, you know, before and after pictures. It was quite easy. Ultimately, I think what we're all getting to here is there are so many different mediums out there to really self-manage, and it can be quite easy no matter where you are in the world, up in the Canadian Arctic or down over here in California.
In Canada.
We do have internet up there.
You do?
We actually do, yes. But ultimately, getting to... I guess back to some of this, is that you really can do it. For some of you that are getting into this for the first time, self-management is not really something I would recommend. That's my personal recommendation. I would definitely suggest getting a property management, at least for the first year, maybe two, seeing how it's really done, seeing what type of expenses typically come up with your property, and then if you decide to take the plunge, go forward and try it out with one property and then add on more as you feel more comfortable.
Yeah, I second that. I did not start with self-management. I thought it would be much easier to just learn first with the existing provider. So when you guys purchase a property and there's a provider, a property management that comes along with the provider, it's probably a good idea to start out with those. And you can always change property manager. I've done that over the years in self-management and different property.
And you haven't been that many years in this. You're 4 years in, right?
4 years.
Four years. Yeah, over the years, he says.
Over the many years.
But you got a lot of properties, so it's like dog years. You know, it's like compressed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The more mistakes you make in the beginning, the more they are dog years.
Which is a great point. Fail fast. Don't be afraid to fail, but fail forward. And just learn from it quick. So when you have these experiences, like if you're newer and you're not into this self-management idea and you think we're crazy up here, right? Which we might be crazy, okay? It's not perfect. There are some real pitfalls that can happen with self-management too. Assume that the experience you have with your property manager is them teaching you to be a manager. Okay? View it like that. They are your free tutor. You know, you're paying them to be your manager, but you're going to learn about property management from them.